The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.
Okay, lads, we go again. My name is Shane Stapleton. With me this week, I have Paul O'Hare from the Mirror. I have the Ladbrokes, Declan Maron. How are you, Declan? And Rob Hines from the Mirror as well. Lads, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
All good, Shane. Fun.
It's the podcast that's as on the money as an Antoine Griezmann fancy dress costume, apparently.
Shh. Huh?
Aren't we?
That's some start.
Well, during this week's episode, we're going to touch on all the football from the weekend coming, the Friday night football, Arsenal and Liverpool, all the weekend's football, what's coming on in Stephen's Day, and then we'll have a little touch on the horse racing and the rugby as well. Lads, let's just go straight for the big one. Paul, I want to talk to you about Arsenal and Liverpool. A lot of talk about these two sides since the release of the 89 documentary. Like, it's a game that I think we'd all relish a meeting of these two teams, and I always think of Arshavin scoring those four goals in that great game in Anfield a few years back. But while it's a big game, there's not a huge amount at stake bar fourth position.
Damn Man City, eh?
Yeah.
I think that's probably going to be sort of par for the course for the rest of the season, really, because City are just tearing away with things at the moment, and it really is just a bun fight for sort of second, third and fourth. And I think maybe the sort of the attitude that you have to adopt going into these sort of, you know, still sort of a glamour tie, particularly. I quite like the Friday night ties, and, you know, unless they clash with League of Ireland, which is kind of my bread and butter, and might take, you know, if this was a League of Ireland night, Arsenal Liverpool on the TV might take a dint on a lot of the attendances. But I think you have to just appreciate these games for what they are as standalone fixtures, you know, because Arsenal Liverpool, yeah, you're right, they've you know, lucrative Champions League places to try and nail down for next season, so there is plenty at stake. But in terms of a title race, of course, it doesn't carry that sort of weight going into it tomorrow night, but it's still a tasty Friday night fixture that I will be enjoying over some Christmas pints tomorrow night.
Yeah, if you think we've 18 games gone in the season, so 36 games between them, 69 goals between them, so they're averaging more or less two goals a game. So would you be expecting an open game that way? Liverpool have had a very good defensive record recently.
Yeah, they have. You know, sort of history in this fixture would certainly suggest that it's going to be a bit of a goal fest. Just from, you know, looking at some of the stats sort of yesterday and last night, Liverpool have scored three or more goals in their last four meetings with Arsenal under Jurgen Klopp. You take into that the game earlier in the season, the 4-0 at Anfield earlier in the season. I think Peter Cech was saying recently, or I read something that he was saying, that it was one of the worst experiences of his career.
Right.
You know, Liverpool are also bidding for four in a row over Arsenal as well. So, you know, I think there's definitely goals at stake in this game.
Disaster waiting to happen for one team at some stage. I don't think you can trust either team, Rob, can you?
You can't. You definitely can't. But I think here, Liverpool have looked really good. I mean, Arsenal played well at the weekend. Mm. Ozil is really playing some
didn't
good
take
football.
Their chances, though. Like, Ozil scored a cracker, but...
Yeah, they didn't take their chances. Liverpool looked well. Obviously, the three of the big names all on the score sheet. I think here you'd be looking for a bit of value. I think Liverpool to win and both teams to score 16-5 is a very big price.
Yeah, I think both teams to score is going to be a very popular market for that one. Just to give you the match betting on that as well. I mean, it's pretty open in the match betting. 7-5 Arsenal, 13-5 the draw, and 17-10 about Liverpool. I think, as you mentioned, Rob, both teams to score is a big option in that one. And also a team to win from behind, because it really could go either way. You might get a big, massive price about that. I mean, Liverpool to win from behind, 10-1. You'd be maybe more inclined to go Arsenal to win from behind, just because Liverpool start like a house on fire and tend to fire the goals in early. And it is also one of our double odds games as well. So if you're back in the first goal scorer, if they score inside 15 minutes, you get double odds.
Yeah, Liverpool absolutely roasted Bournemouth 4-0. Last week, and you know, Salah, Coutinho, and Firmino all got on the score sheet. But it's an interesting point from this one is actually Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain going back to play against Arsenal for the first time, and the fact that after a really shaky start, remember there used to be montages of him hitting passes basically to nobody out right, straight out of play. Has he found his form now?
Well, he had a good game against Bournemouth, didn't he? But he's still one of those sort of players that it's a little bit like Theo Walcott, who wasn't really getting much of a look in at Arsenal this season. There's sort of a bit of chat about him possibly going away maybe to Everton, seemed to be interested in him. But Chamberlain is one of those players still tagged with that, you know, delivering on his potential. And I think his versatility at Arsenal certainly cost him in terms of he wants to play in that midfield position, but he was shunted into wide positions. He was playing as a wing back, you know. And while he has shown flashes of what he is capable of at Liverpool, he still hasn't started a huge amount of games, you know. That said, the way Klopp plays and the way Liverpool play with this high-intensity pressing game, they are going to churn through the players. and we all know about their sort of the Fab Four and a couple of the others. There is going to be squad rotation in that type of game. You would probably expect him to play tomorrow night. I'd say he'd be well up for this. I know Arsene Wenger was saying this morning that in hindsight he regrets playing Chamberlain in the initial game earlier in the season.
Hindsight must be one of Arsene Wenger's favourite words.
Like. Absolutely, yeah. Like I think it was a matter of days before moving. What do you move for? 30 million, 35 million, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
But you'd like Madness. To think, you know, you kind of like, you know, there's a huge sort of chat at the moment about players and not celebrating against former clubs and all this nonsense.
They can't have a chance.
Oh, it's terrible stuff.
Grow up.
Lukaku, just grow up. Man who played, whether he's just sulking or whether he's just not celebrating against a club that he was on loan with, it's nonsense. Just celebrate your goals, you know, and beat your chest and do whatever you want. Celebrate like a lunatic. But yeah, Oxlade-Chamberlain, serious potential, but I can't remember off the top of my head what age he is, but we're still talking about him as a player with serious potential.
Yeah. I think what you said about Walcott is funny, actually, because it looks like Oxlade-Chamberlain has had a look at Walcott as the sort of canary down the mine and gone, well, I'm going to be sitting on the bench here when I'm going on 30. He's still got a couple of good years in him, to be fair.
Still be searching for a position as well.
Maybe, yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. He's 11-1 to get the first goal, so if you're following the narrative on that, that's not a bad outprice.
Yeah. Mm. I find the Ozil stuff funny. I was reading something from Ian Wright, obviously the former Arsenal legend turned pundit, sort of jumping up and down about Ozil and, you know, his sort of form of late and tying it into sort of transfer window stuff, and his contract is running up at the end of the season and angling for moves away, and just that whole notion of a player who's sort of been, you know, analysed to death for right and for wrong. He's had some terrible sort of performance for Arsenal sort of in the last couple of seasons, but he has come good at the moment and he's playing particularly well. Linked with Man United, but is that form, you know, is it a coincidence?
This could be potentially one of the games of the season, because, I mean, Arsenal on their day are absolutely brilliant to watch when they're all in top form, as are Liverpool. So, I mean, if the two of them bring their best to this, it could be an absolute cracker to get the sort of festive football underway.
We'll sort of lead into predictions now. Ozil isn't out, by the way, which gives, or is out, which denies plan B for Arsenal. I'd be inclined to think that this could be I'm going to go with 3-1, because I just think Arsenal have such a soft underbelly. And the fact that, and I know I've said that Arsenal will score, but it's just 4 goals conceded in 9 games for Liverpool. So I just think that they might have that little bit of an edge.
Yeah, I can see Liverpool here as
even at Anfield now. Even at the Emirates.
At the Emirates, yeah, big time. I think Liverpool to win and both teams to score 16-5. I mean, if you want to maybe go a bit short and just expect goals, over 3.5 goals, things 5-4, which isn't a bad one maybe for the trebles and the cumes.
You were saying 3-1 Liverpool, was it?
Yeah.
I mean, you're getting about 18-1 on that, so that's a big old price. And I wouldn't be in disagreement with either of you. I think Liverpool are going to win this one. I'd be brave enough taking them on the handicap. I don't have it in front of me. I think it would probably be a little bit over 7-2 or around that. Liverpool -1 on the handicap would be very interesting, because if they win, they're going to win with plenty of goals.
Yeah, the only thing is you can't trust them. Paul, what do you...
Well, just, you know, you touched on it there with Giroud out. I think Ramsey's injured.
Wilshere's back now, though.
Yeah,
he started one game, and they were talking about he's playing games consistently. It's like,
I'll get him in for England.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alexis Sanchez, does he look interested? Another player who's, you know, linked.
Doesn't
to the
look
away.
Hot and cold, isn't he?
Yeah. Last home performance. I'm not sure if they're. It might be off in January.
And they're talking about how he's distracted because Chile didn't qualify for the World Cup, and he's. Will you give it over?
And Pep Guardiola was sort of kicking questions after the game, the Tottenham game. He was sort of kicking the questions about Sanchez, about their interest in Sanchez. He was kicking it to the curb, but it wasn't an outright sort of flat denial, So
surely City do not need another attacking player like Sanchez.
Keep the stockpile and going. Why not?
If you're Arsenal, would you take your money and run though?
Yeah, yeah. That's true too.
So what score did you go with, Paul?
I'm going for a 2-0 Liverpool win.
2-0 Liverpool win. Okay, so we'll move to another team that hasn't a hope of catching Chelsea or catching Man City, and that's Chelsea, who are away to Everton, 3rd versus 10th. Everton look fairly sublime at the moment under Big Sam, don't they, Paul?
Yeah, Fireman Sam, it's great.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Looking sublime or getting, you know, good results.
At least to their own deck. I mean, if you're interested in. But the interesting thing is that Alvaro Morata, he was booked in the Carabao Cup for putting the ball under his shirt to celebrate his wife's pregnancy.
I mean, maybe this is why players aren't celebrating.
Yeah, the bait was a lot to answer for here, I think. In the last 10 games, we've won 8, drawn only 1 and lost 1 game, said Conte. Like, that's title winning form, really, except for Man City. So while you look at Chelsea and think, yeah, they're in third position, they're what, 14 points off, they're actually playing very well.
Mm.
They are playing very well, yeah. But I mean, I think in comparison to the last, to Liverpool-Arsenal, this could be quite the opposite. This could be a sort of 1-0, 0-0, 1-1 tight enough game. You'd imagine Big Sam will have some sort of plan to try and keep Chelsea out, Everton, even at home.
Everton are going to park the Big Sam in front of the goals.
I said it last week that it was a shame that Everton weren't playing City anytime soon, because Big Sam would love a win against, you know, the sort of big build-up foreign manager, and he has another opportunity here. I mean, he'd love to get one over Conte. And
he's also, you know, won his last two games against Chelsea as a manager.
And there you go. On the betting, I mean, if you like Everton's chances at home, 9-2, 11-4, but the draw, 8-13, Chelsea.
And this talk of Eden Hazard getting a massive £90 million move, could you see that happening, Paul?
To Manchester United, yeah. Mm. Like this was a couple of stories there yesterday or the day before. Interesting, like he's 2.5 years left in his contract. There's talk that he could be offered sort of 300,000 and that, you know, a week, and that you know, he might sort of reject that. If he did, sort of, like, it would obviously being, you know, be reunited with Mourinho again.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because I mean, surely if he can't trust Mkhitaryan, he's on his way out, he knows he can't trust Hazard. They had an absolute shocker the year he left.
But before, it seemed he didn't trust Juan Mata, booted him out the door and ended up getting a nice bit out of him later on.
He's still not playing
United.
Him that much now, though.
Well, he's not now, but he did. It's not as if he said, you didn't do for me once before. Yeah, and I'm
satisfied
not
the masses, put him on a couple of games and he didn't have
options. I thought he was the main player there for him.
There was definitely a frosting, I think, of the relationship between Mourinho and Hazard at the time, but I think that seems to have been patched up. Sort of interesting that, like, the 90 million talk, if it ever comes off, Pogba was 89 million, which was obviously the world record at the time until it was blown out of the water by Neymar, so it'd be a British record. But it's just looking, I don't know whether you can sort of carry too much stock and sort of stats like this, but, you know, Chelsea have scored 13 goals against Everton in their last four meetings with them, and they're also looking to beat Everton for the fourth time in a row. But then, you know, Big Sam's come in. He's turned Everton from a relegation team. I think they're 8th or 9th in the Premier League at the moment. So, a firm believer in momentum.
Well.
You know,
it kind of beggars belief to see Rooney actually moving around the field, scoring goals.
I said last
penalties.
Week, new Kevin Nolan. Well, he scored a penalty after the one miss. So, you know what I mean? Penalties galore. He's fallen into that role now, just arriving late.
Yeah. How much would Rooney love to score against Chelsea? Is there any sort of decent price on
another double odds example there? So again, if you like Rooney to if he gets an early goal, again, early penalty for Rooney, he's 15-2, so you could get 15-1 if he
not
scores
bad.
Inside 15
he has
minutes.
The cojones
not
to do
bad.
It
I was having a look at the Ladbrokes side earlier on today, and maybe I'm off my rocker thinking this, but just looking at sort of a couple of sort of long term sort of punts, Rooney's 40-1 to be top goal scorer in the Premier League this season. I don't think he'll be top goal scorer, but a fifth of the odds for second or third. He's he's 10 goals, 4 behind Mohamed Salah.
Well, note the date that you said it.
We can all slag you when it comes to nothing.
I'll never be asked back on this podcast.
But like, on the face of it, Everton, Chelsea, two excellent clubs, but I wouldn't be shocked, especially with Morata out as well, if it ended up being a dour.
I think it will be a dour. Yeah, I think you're looking at it. I think it could be 0-0, 1-0 either way. Maybe the value is maybe Everton the draw 11-4.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be putting huge money on Chelsea at very short odds.
Yeah, I think a big problem with Everton before Sam came in was they were leaking goals, but three clean sheets in their last five games sort of suggests that perhaps it could be a tight enough game.
I'm sure
Big
Sam would be happy enough with a draw, even at home against Chelsea.
Mm. Yeah, both the 0-0 draw 9-1 there at the moment, or 21-5 just on the draw, and both teams to score even, so you could get a 1-1 21-5. So if you're fancying the draw, there's not bad value there either.
Another, I suppose, pretender to the throne, Man United. They're away to Leicester at Saturday at 7:45. Leicester have won 4 of their last 5 games, so they are pretty much flying. I know they lost their last game, but Leicester, I think it's actually a pretty finely poised game.
Yeah, I think Leicester have a great chance here, and even, you know, it's something just still doesn't seem right there at the minute. You could see Mourinho, you know, didn't celebrate I think it was the fourth goal last night, just sitting on the bench, you know, everyone else celebrating
the
around
Cup,
him. Doesn't look, you know, I mean, I know that's the sort of person he is and everyone else, but it just doesn't read well. And it's, if that's rubbing off on the players, you know, and that was obviously a bit of a blow for them losing that game last night.
Yeah, and I know I made that point last week about how if he averages a 3-year run in charge of a club, we're more or less at the midway point now. If he has a couple of more losses, and we've seen that he can lose the plot in terms of like being very narky very quickly, like that press conference.
And he already has.
The press conference after City leading into Bournemouth, where he was given out to the press for not showing respect and asking about Bournemouth when he'd actually pulled the plug early. Paul, like, do you see it at that stage, or that we're at that stage already, that a couple of more losses, even though they're in second position, that things could turn sour very quickly?
I still think that there's a bit of stock to be put into the fact that compared to where United were under Van Gaal and the sort of dire football that was being played, even though Van Gaal is adamant that he played an attacking game, which is just nonsense.
He was chipping off during the week there as
well. Yeah, he was, exactly, yeah. And he sort of said, you know, Van Gaal was sort of saying that he, you know, he's not sure if he'll ever come back into management, but actually,
if
you know...
could.
If I could get a good job in an English club and get one over
Man
United. He's
been linked with Swansea. I seen somewhere today I was linking him with
his so dream job, no doubt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But he obviously, he seems very sore over the whole way he was sacked by United and Woodward and what have you. And the suggestion that Woodward was sort of quietly going around sort of chatting to Mourinho and you know, tapping him up for the gig.
Didn't he earlier that season present Mourinho with an award? Like the season he took his job, I think. Or Mourinho presented him an award. Whatever way it was, some awards do. And the two of them were laughing it up, like treating each other like best friends and brothers, and all this sort of quiet chat was going on. So
you'd love to see them come up against each other, wouldn't you?
Oh,
if he somehow managed to get that sort of job, what a match that would be.
I think Mourinho, I still think that he's doing a job there. Like you take City, I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. Like hypothetical speak, obviously, but you take Man City out of the reckoning, and they are sort of leading that chasing pack, you know. So. He has kind of got them, pointed them in a sort of in a direction. He's brought in sort of players to do a job who seem to be doing the job that he wants, even though some of them have been injured. They seem to be going in a certain direction, but they seem to be sort of stuttering along. And in terms of the narkiness, I suppose he's, you know, he is that type of character, and he is going to get rubbed up the wrong way, but he plays the game as well. He knows well what he's at. But I'd say it's the fact that it's Pep. And I'd say it's the fact that it's the Derby rivals and the City rivals, and you probably can't walk around Manchester, you probably can't get anywhere without just having this Man City stuff rammed down your throat. And I think that, bearing in mind their history, I think that probably more than anything is enough to make them scorpion.
We'll get the prices from Declan. We'll also just jump on to Man United, Burnley, and then come back to a couple of those Saturday games. But just what's standing out for you?
For the match betting, Leicester are 13-4, the draw is 5-2, Man United are 5-6. I think United to win to nil is probably a little bit of value there, nearly a bit bigger than 2-1. I mean, they tend to sort of strangle games, so you could see that being
one,
that
1-0.
Yeah, if it could go one or two ways, it could be Leicester really causing a bit of trouble. Although we saw against Palace, they looked a bit flat. So if you're kind of banking on it going that way, follow in that, because 21-10 is an awfully big price.
Very disappointing against Palace, really disappointing.
Yeah, so it's an awfully big price. Now another game where we'll be doubling odds on when he first goal scores is loads over the Christmas period. So do check out in shops. But again, if you like someone like Vardy, he's a pretty big price, 11-2. Or again, Lukaku's 100-30. So you're going to get double odds. If they score nice and early.
Yeah. I'm going to go with 2-1 to Leicester. I think Mahrez, I just don't understand how he's still with Leicester City. I think Shinji Okazaki might nip in for one or two as well.
He's my fantasy football captain. So
He's a king.
I just had to play my wild card today.
just in terms of stats, I know stats aren't everything, but they're always a bit of fun.
Lash them out.
This is completely cogging here, but Manchester United have lost only one of their last 12 league visits to Leicester City.
There you go.
Right. Man, you're after putting to us now, aren't you?
2-1, 15-2 as well, Shane, just to point that out.
Good stuff. So we'll come back to a couple of other Saturday games, but just to jump on to Tuesday while we're on the topic of United, they're against Burnley in what is basically a Champions League clash, I think we can say at this stage, for Burnley. But just a reference back to that stat that Gary Neville put out last week from the West Brom game against Man United, that 7 of the 11 starters were at the club when Alex Ferguson was in charge, and there's £660 million spent since. So it has been a real bungling of resources from Man United in the intervening years, wouldn't you say, Rob?
Big time, yeah. Like, I mean, that's a huge problem. When you look at the money
every team spends. Does squander money, though.
Oh, yeah, I know. But, I mean, not every team spends the crazy amounts of money Manchester United spend. And, I mean, that statistic does not look good for them at all. Mm. You consider it a huge amount of money. And even if they're going to get a Hazard, they're going to be spending more money as well. And, yeah, it doesn't read well at all.
You fire enough shit against the wall, some of it will stick.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how much of that is in the last, say, 2-3 years, as opposed to when the market has gone absolutely bonkers, as opposed to before that.
It's interesting that like Mourinho's obviously brought in his own players, the Pogbas, the Zlatans, Eric Bailly, who's obviously injured for a while. But it's interesting that he's sort of got rid of a lot of the Louis van Gaal signings, you know, the Schneiderlin's, Di Maria was a flop, Memphis Depay, you know, this is some of these lads who came in at sort of big money. But just going back to the Gary Neville thing, like there was a bit of sort of, you know, a bit of chat in papers and on television and stuff, and there was an interesting question sort of posed about when Ferguson retired and the team who won the league by 10 or 11 points but were sort of perceived to be a weak enough Manchester United team. You know, did Ferguson, did he sort of in some ways nearly hamstring or leave David Moyes a bit hamstrung as such?
Yeah, I think
in terms
at the time everyone sort of was saying that thing, and it was sort of saying it was the ideal time for Ferguson to go out and all that sort of thing, because, you know, it wasn't that strong of a team. It was going to be very hard for whoever was coming in to win the league with them the following season.
The issue with that was Moyes had the option to get rid of about 5 or 6 of them players, and he didn't, and he ended up losing his job because of that, because there was player power there and he had the option to bung a load out and start a new squad. I mean, there was Evra, there was Ferdinand, they were all going towards last year's contract, and they're the ones that ended up revolting against him. So I would say Mourinho, in fairness to him, he's dealing with a lot of spillover from recent teams that are still there, but at the end of the day, you can't spend all that money. I mean, we said it last week, I think you start afresh. Himself and Guardiola arrived at the same time. They built up their teams, and Guardiola's is playing better and winning more. So
it's interesting. I think that Mourinho does, he has put his faith in those players, though, in those old Fergie players. You know, there are lads that he's signed that he can't play at the moment through injuries, but he is putting his faith in those Ferguson.
That's
players.
The mentality issue, isn't it? Because I mean, he's all about the mentality of players. He doesn't want sort of weak-willed players coming into the team, and anyone that was under Ferguson wouldn't have been weak-willed.
He wants John Terry's and Didier Drogba's. Lads, we'll just get your scorelines. The scoreline now.
I think the value here, United to win and under 2.5 goals, I think it'll be a tight enough game. You know, Burnley be trying to sort of keep the goals out, 21-10. United to win under 2.5 goals, maybe 2-0.
You'll probably follow that most of the season for Manchester United as well, to be honest.
Paul?
I'm going to be very boring inside with Rob there. Probably narrow enough win for
I'd love
United
to see Johnny Walters come back and get the winner, but I'd say it's going to be United 2-0. We'll jump back to the Saturday the 23rd fixtures. Burnley against Spurs. What are your thoughts here, Paul?
I just think it's a bit of a brute of a game for Spurs to be coming straight back into after last week. They were never at the races in that game against Man City. They were just completely outclassed, and you know, they just look a shell-shocked team, Spurs. You know, they've been getting pats on the back, sort of particularly after the Real Madrid Champions League win. They've been getting pats on the back sort of from last, you know, what they did last season and the last couple of years. And they just seem to be a team that just have stalled and don't really know which direction they're going. I think, you know, they've obviously had Alderweireld's sort of, his injury has been a huge loss from the Dele Alli stuff has been sort of spoken about left, right and centre in terms of he's not performing. I just think they're at a crossroads. They just don't really seem to know where they're going. And I think when they're in that sort of mindset, I think they become a very predictable team to play against. Because when Spurs play well, they can be scintillating. They can be, not Man City scintillating, they can be a very good team. But I think if that's not clicking for them, I think they're quite a predictable team, and they're quite easily found out.
Yeah, look, I mean, as good as City were, City against Spurs last week, I think, is one of the best Premier League performances maybe of all time. They could have had how many more goals. Yeah. But as good as City were, Spurs were not at the races at all.
We'll come on to City again in a minute.
Spurs are lucky to have Kane and Dele Alli for these games. They should have been out for a couple of games, to be honest. Yeah, that was absolute horrible, sick nerve tackles.
What are the prices like here?
With regards to the betting, I mean, it's going to be short enough for Spurs to win it. Spurs are 8-15, the draw's 14-5, and Burnley are a big old 6-1 there if you think they can sort of keep going. They're keeping on. Halftime, full-time looks a good option, I think, in this one. You go draw Spurs. You can see it being tight first half, and Spurs managing somehow at 29-10.
Paul? You're calling it now.
Yeah.
Off that fence.
Yeah. I just think Burnley win.
Burnley win.
Oh, yeah. 6-1. Win.
Yeah, yeah, I Burnley think.
Title chasing Burnley.
Again, a draw. Maybe you have to pay. A lot of, you know, respect to Burnley because they're doing great, but they're two horrible fixtures at Christmas.
And a small squad where you could see it going a little bit south towards the end of the season.
And I think after Christmas, I think the first week in January, I think they've Liverpool and is it City, it might be.
Oh, they'll be looking well after that.
January, so that could really knock them for 6 really over the Christmas. But I think Spurs might win this one.
Burnley have really sorted out their away form. I know they've sorted out their away form, which was a little bit of an issue for them last year. They've really sorted that out. And I think knowing that they have that sort of bit of ballast, that bit of confidence when they go away from home, will hopefully sort of maybe in terms of their home performances give them a bit more freedom. And they have lost sort of some players. They've lost Robbie Brady, but they just seem to be sort of, you know, round pegged round holes type thing. They have lads who can come in, not particularly fashionable, but they come in and they just seamless transition. They just pick up and keep going. There's no huge dramatic change to that team. They're just a well-oiled machine at the moment.
We'll have a look at Man City now, because they have a couple of fixtures as well. Firstly against Bournemouth, and then they are away to Newcastle, who we'd imagine they'll hammer anyway. They'll probably hammer Bournemouth
as well.
You'll
probably get a Man City double on there if you back both the way. You'll probably increase your...
Rob, you like this fixture against...
Yeah, look, you have to feel sorry for them. I mean, they played great at Old Trafford, could have got something out of the game. Were hammered last week, are probably more than likely going to be hammered again here. I mean, City, the way they played against Spurs was absolutely top class. De Bruyne was running the show. They looked really, really good. As I said, one of the best Premier League performances of all time, maybe?
Yeah, it's absolutely scintillating.
So I think, you know, City here, you can back the -2, -3. I think they could win this 4 or 5 nil.
There's no value on it, though. There's no value. -2, they're 8-11. -3, they're just about 8-5. So you really
it's like
are...
back in Barcelona.
It is, absolutely. Yeah. It's getting to that point.
You have to actually go in play, hope that the weaker team goes 1-0 up, and you might get in around
they're
evens.
They're 1-11 in the match betting now. So, I mean, it's not
these
one
are very
can...
similar odds to what West Ham were coming here a couple of weeks ago. West Ham actually really put it up to City that day. I think West Ham were about 28-1.
It'd be different if it was like a Burnley or something like that, though. That could do something like that. Yeah. Bournemouth having a hope.
No, you're not hope.
We can't give Bournemouth any chance. I mean, no. Jermaine Defoe is not going to get it done on his own.
It looks like he's out as well. He got off injured last night.
Well, there you go.
I think he could be out for a bit. He's an ankle injury, I think.
Yeah, they've never won a game, apparently, again. Just doing a great job of reading other people's stats. But they've apparently never won a game in Manchester.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And actually, just to jump on to Newcastle against Man City next, or on Stephen's Day, if City were to win their two games in that block and Newcastle were to obviously lose to City and lose their game before that, there'd actually be 43 points between the teams, which is nuts at just past halfway point.
Well, Newcastle could be bottom of the league at this stage as well, because I think Swansea have a winnable enough game. I know they don't have a lucky winning end, but they do have a winnable enough game on Saturday. And I mean, this is, you have to back City again here by a couple of goals. The handicap's a bit better here. I think, what's the -1?
Well, just looking at the match betting first, as you said, it's a bit better. 1-4 Man City for this one, 5-1 to draw, 12-1 Newcastle. So let's get the handicap now. While I tell you that also, again, good chance for value in this one is the double odds first goal scorer again. I mean, that one looks nailed on in that game. You imagine City will score fairly early on in it. Handicap betting, just have it in front of me here. Man City -1, 4-6, -2, 33-20. -3, 19-5. So you're getting bigger prices with that. But
Will they beat them 4-0?
City are so amazing to watch that we're not even talking about these as real games. Yeah. We're assuming, unless they capitulate themselves.
Newcastle's not an easy place to go.
Well, it probably is this year. Interesting with Benitez, they've lost 8 of their last 9 games, which is very similar to the form that Swansea have been in before. Paul Clement got the bullet for something fairly similar.
Yeah,
It's a championship squad.
Yeah.
And they had a reasonable start to the season. And, you know, there was that big standoff with Rafa and Mike Ashley, in terms of getting the money and the players that he wanted to sign, and he sort of kicked on with what he has, but it's sort of coming home to roost now, isn't it?
Has there been any updates on that takeover? Because I know it's sort of up and down as to
I think it's gone past the basic levels. They're heading towards advanced talks at this stage.
It needs to happen soon, because coming up to January, they need to get some players. There's talk that
you're right. I think Shane's right, that it's, you know, from an outside looking in perspective, they seem to be quite far down the road with it. There seems to be sort of minor sort of contractual bits and bobs that are sort of holding it up. But there has been talk recently of some sort of financial guarantee that, you know, that this will go through and that Benitez might get 30, 40, 50 million to spend in January. Mm. And it will then, you know, that money will then be recouped or whatever.
But just to look at others,
that needs to happen because they're gone otherwise.
Just back to City again. Another thing off the field in the past week or so, there's a fan who tried to come on and confront Guardiola in the Carabao Cup game, and he slipped. And then just this week as well, a man has been jailed for 16 weeks for a racially aggravated common assault of Raheem Sterling. He showed up at the training ground and abused, obviously racially abused, and threw a kick at Sterling. He's a United fan. How sad an individual do you have to be to do that? Come on.
I mean, he's not even worth the publicity. I mean, he's just an idiot. He's, there's no place in football for these idiots,
So we're all looking for handicap wins for Man City in both these games against Bournemouth and away to Newcastle.
I think for those games, I'd be looking more towards the goal scorers. You're going to get more value. And players like to get Aguero to score two or more, I mean, it looks nailed on at 23 to 10. It's short, but it looks nailed on. Or even to get a hat-trick, you could get a pretty big price about that.
I presume they are kind of the markets you have to play with Man City
pretty
these
much
days.
At the moment, yeah.
There's no huge value in straight match betting. Like, it's...
And eventually what will happen is they'll just get one of those Celtic results where they lose 4-0 to Hearts and you're left, you know, with your accumulator sunk.
So that Newcastle City game is next Wednesday. But the in between then, on Stephen's Day as well, Liverpool-Swansea. Do you think there's any hope of a bounce from the Swansea players after Clement left? Or, you know, with the likes of Boney basically being a traffic cone up front. Is there anything to be said for this team?
If Liverpool beat Arsenal, they'll struggle against Swansea. Yeah. If they don't, they'll go smash Swansea to pieces. But if they beat, that'll be a very Liverpool.
What were they doing getting rid of Gary Monk? Honest to God. Yeah, like, they moved away from the sort of, I know I hate this philosophy talk, but they moved away from what was working for them before, that they had under Rodgers, that they had under Martinez, Laudrup, and they're just circling the drain, aren't they?
Yeah, they've just become far too trigger happy. And I think it kind of maybe sums up their ambition, whereby, you know, you sort of see the likes of, you know, Tony Pulis sort of, you know, been talked about as potential managers.
Maybe some turn for them, wouldn't it?
That's confirmation that we're no longer going to do it the way that it used to work, where we had a Spanish sort of influence and we tried to play good football.
God, that's great.
It's, but it, you know, and other people have been linked to the job as well. We've talked about Van Gaal. Like, Van Gaal's, he's not going to go to Swansea. You know, Ryan Giggs seems to have turned it down. Ronald Koeman's been linked with the job.
Imagine asking Ryan Giggs. Did you watch that documentary of Ryan Giggs taking over for the last few games?
No.
Of that season when Moyes, he just came across as a bumbling idiot. Like, really did.
Is this the second time he's turned down that Swansea job then?
The cheek of him to turn down anybody.
Yeah, Premier League job. Yeah,
he got confidence, he shouldn't.
In his defence,
put him in charge of a pen.
Isn't he more of a Cardiff lad, if I'm not mistaken? He might have slight biases.
Look at Brian Kidd in with Man City. There's no loyalty anymore in the game for me.
You've seen it with Everton and you've seen it with Palace. When the new boss has come in, there's been a bit of a bounce when they've done a sacking. I mean, Swansea are playing home to Palace on Saturday, and you'd imagine that that's the game they might get a result out of rather than going to Anfield. But again, this is a typical 0-0 Anfield game for Liverpool, isn't it? These are the games they drop points in.
Maybe a bit of electric shock therapy for Boney, and he might actually move around enough to get a winning goal here. I'd go with Liverpool.
I think you'd have to.
3-0 here.
If Liverpool beat Arsenal, well, keep an eye on that draw, because 6-1 is big for the draw.
Yeah, it is. Paul?
Boney, when he went to Man City.
Oh.
Is that the maddest transfer?
Yeah. Probably. But he was class before he went there.
They had a tendency to do that for a while, City. They bought whatever was hot for.
Yeah, I know, kind
of
hindsight and all that, but he doesn't move.
No.
Remember they bought Roque Santa Cruz, who was absolutely on fire with Blackburn, just the injuries started to creep back in again. But anyway, I digress. There was one last game that on Stephen's Day that you wanted to look at, Paul. Watford against Leicester. What is it that you love so much about this particular shambles of a fixture? bland sounding game of all time.
I know.
I'd tell you what, though, you're not wrong. I mean, if you were going to ask me to sit down and watch one of those games we discussed there, this one is going to be a little bit more even and probably a couple more goals in it.
Yeah, actually, Marco Silva against Claude Puel. So maybe I was a bit trigger happy and unfair to you there, Paul.
No, I've quite enjoyed watching Watford at times this season, that sort of real sort of swashbuckling Cavalier sort of style about them, but they also have the worst home record in terms of goals conceded of any team in the Premier League. So they're kind of anything at the moment. Marco Silva getting plaudits left, right and centre for the job he's done, and then ever since he was linked with the Everton job, they've just gone on the slide. I think they've lost their last three and they've lost four of their last five.
How many players have they had in the pitch in each of those games as
Exactly,
well?
Exactly,
If Marco Silva was a Chucky Bicky, he'd eat himself, wouldn't he? He absolutely loves himself, there's no doubt about it. But go on, Paul.
I've no real sort of hard and fast sort of. I was just trying to think of games away from sort of maybe some of the more obvious ones. I just think that's primed for a Leicester win that game.
I agree with you there, and I was looking just at the match betting and over and under goals, and Leicester and over 2.5 is 100-30. You're not going to get a better price than that, I would say, in most of those games actually, because, as you said, it looks like the kind of game that would suit Leicester perfectly. Watford are going to have to attack them. Leicester are going to hit them on the break and they're going to score a couple of goals.
Yeah, Leicester will be looking for a bit of a to come back after that very disappointing result last week, so they might be worth taking here.
I would go for 1-1. I mean, it's very hard to judge what's going to be the after the pre-Christmas fixtures, what's going to happen. I mean, and you're talking about, like, if meant if Arsenal lose to Liverpool, will Liverpool be able to beat Swansea? Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. But I suppose just we're going to finish up the football now. Do we think that Man City are going to fully have confirmed that the title is theirs by the end of this particular period? Declan?
I don't think the other managers will concede.
Are you going to pay out? Are Ladbrokes going to pay out?
I don't think they're going to pay out.
They should pay out. Come on.
I don't think the other managers will concede the title yet. Yeah. I think we know now it's over. At this point,
it's over, yeah.
Absolutely over.
Yeah. Is there any special bets, Declan, that we need to discuss before we wrap up the football?
No, not really. Apart from your Acket insurance coupons, if shop, if one team lets you down to fivefold or bigger, you get money back as a free bet. So keep an eye on your coupons over the week as well.
Good enough. We'll move on to the horse racing. So, Rob, talk to us about the long walk hurdle at Ascot on Saturday.
Yeah, this is an interesting enough race. Obviously, you know what I mean. Harry's the favourite. Won the race last year, and I think, you know, could win here again. It was very poor conditions last year, if I remember correctly. I think it was quite foggy, and it sort of, the horses disappeared and then sort of emerged at the finishing line. But he was quite clear. He was surprisingly bet last time, but I think, you know, we could bounce back with a win here. I know Lammy Serge is a bit better in the weights with Little Rockefeller, who bet him last time, so he might get a bit closer. He might
step
be
up in distance as well. Yeah, 3 miles. I'm a Lammy Serge fan.
Yeah,
are you?
I think I'll side with, you know what I mean, Harry. I think it could be the first leg of maybe a treble I might do over a few days.
Yeah, that you know what I mean, Harry. The race at Newbury, wasn't it? It was the race that Thistlecrack had come back in.
That's right.
After sort of, you know, 11 months off or something, and you know Thistlecrack going back over hurdles just to get a run into him before the King George, and obviously things didn't go well for Thistlecrack that day, and sort of travelled really well. You know what I mean, Harry. Just caught in the hop by that horse Beer Goggles. He was the 40-1 outsider, and just caught them all.
It was a bit disappointing. I don't really know how you can explain it, to be honest. I've been sort of scratching my head and looking for any connections with excuse. I think you can just chalk it down to maybe Beer Goggles ran a stormer on the day, getting weight from quite a few of them. I'd agree with you though. Like, I mean, looking down the betting here, 7-4, you know what I mean, Harry. 4-1 Lammy Serge, 4-1 Little Rockefeller, Thomas Campbell in there at 5s, 9-1 Sam Spinner, The World's End at 12s, and 22-1 or bigger the rest. And there is a few like that in here actually. Some of the sort of young up and comers with quite a bit of potential. The likes of Sam Spinner and The World's End are, I think, very interesting here. The World's End probably a little bit of each way value if you're looking for that. In this one, well backed at Haydock last time, and might have just needed that run. Bit disappointing, but if you look back to his form, the Albert Bartlett, he fell when going really nicely in that. So there's a bit of a suggestion that the World's End is a bit better than that 12-1. Looks quite big.
Rob, we had to drag it out here earlier off before we were recording that you had a couple of winners last week. Is, you know what I mean? How are you going to do it here?
I hope so, yes. I'm going to be backing him. I think I might do a couple of sort of trebles over a few days of Christmas. He's going to be the fourth leg. So if he doesn't win, it will be a disastrous start to Christmas for myself.
And what was that winner you had last week?
We tipped Gitarpi. We tipped him at 12s and he won at 9s. Now, he was very lucky to win because...
Starkitect,
obviously.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Starkitect was about 7 lengths clear and would have romped the race.
Well, it was going to romp home and obviously...
It lost its action and broke down.
We'll move on to Stephen's Day. The King George at Kempton might bite. Paul, I'd imagine, would be the hot favourite here.
Yeah, might bite. Real likable head case of a horse. he really is the real deal. But you know, he's quirky as hell, and you know, he's the type of horse that could jump to last and end up in the betting ring or something like that. You know, he is a very, very hot favourite for this race and a justifiable favourite. Fell in a novice chase, I think,
here
in Kempton.
Yeah.
On the same day last year, came back then, had a sort of a prep run for Cheltenham somewhere nondescript, and then absolutely the RSA chase, absolutely romped the race until after the last, just veered violently and allowed Whisper, stablemate, almost.
How it actually won that race is incredible. It completely stopped. Whisper got ahead of him and he got back up. I think Nicky Henderson was quoted this week as saying he stopped at the Guinness 10 for a pint and then still won the race.
One of the funniest things about that is he went past Davy Russell's horse, and Davy was on the Cheltenham preview sort of panel and various places before, sort of talking about Mike Bite slagging him off, and he did exactly what Davy said he would do, but still won the race. So it shows you the talent the horse has.
When it won here last year as well at Kempton, when it fell here last year at Kempton, it was 18 lengths clear. I was going to romp home. So, I mean, it's just...
Fell at the last, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the sort of horse you could never put a huge amount of money on at a short price because you just don't know what it's going to do. But it's definitely the classy horse in the race.
Thought it was interesting this week. Ruby Walsh obviously out injured with his broken leg, but Ruby you know, I think in one of the columns or in newspapers or something like that, he was just hypothetically talking about if he had his choice, you know, what to ride in this race. And he said he'd be all over Mike Bite. He'd love to ride Mike Bite. And that in the RSA chase last year, that he just could not get his head around the pace at which that horse ran the race, you know.
And he's bang on, I'd say, with that as well. There's just to get a look at the betting then, a few on this. 11 to 8 Mike Bite, 4 to 1 Bristol Demai, which is a very big price. 6 to 1 Thistlecrack, Fox Norton 6s, Whispers 9s, Discos 11s, and 20 to 1 or bigger the rest. So, as you said, look, Mike Bite probably justifying favouritism here. I'd be, in terms of talking from the heart, huge Thistlecrack fan. I can't believe that he's, I mean, we'll find out, I suppose, here. Was he lacking fitness, or is he just gone at the game?
Or is class permanent?
He's probably the latter. He's probably gone at the game after
the
that nasty
really
injury.
The Tizzards really talked him up on that comeback run in that
so
hurdle race.
You know, you can
really
always
bullish.
Forgive, you can forgive a horse one awful run, but I mean, he's a lot of questions to answer, but he's a very big price here.
He is,
I mean,
one of the recent superstars as well. That's the thing. 6 to 1 is huge. Huge, I think.
Around about this time last year, he was extremely sharp for the Gold Cup at Cheltenham.
But even that, even that hurdle race though at Newbury, until maybe sort of two out or whatever it was, when he sort of went backwards, which you can kind of forgive a horse maybe fading away like that due to fitness having been off for 11 months, he still travelled really, really well, really strongly. Yeah. So, yeah, you'd be inclined to maybe forgive that run a little bit, but it will be a huge ask.
I wouldn't be recommending people put their money on it, but I probably will put my own more out of, I think it's far too
from
big
the heart.
Like that, Just to flag up one that is interesting here as well that I mentioned, is it's probably still a big price. I mean, Bristol Demai is doing it all season. Now, he might not get it. I mean, if there's rain over Christmas, pile in on Bristol Demai, because that thing, it'll love a bit of a slog.
That's
it'll really
question,
enjoy
it? Just
that.
How will you handle slightly better ground?
Do you know what? I think people have been writing him off. I'm very keen, for whatever reason, to write him off all year, and he keeps rising to it. So I think 4 to 1 is again, probably writing him off quite a bit. And just one more, just to flag up as well. Disco has to be value each way.
I'd say you were going to follow in.
Yeah. Grade one winner, Punchestown, and Run It Down Royal last time. Did him a lot of good. I think in this race, there's a lot of class. You've questions over how a few will run. Disco's probably the main unknown quality in this race, and at 11 to 1 is a really big each way price.
I think we should mention as well Whisper, who obviously nearly picked up the pieces at Cheltenham, and if anything does go wrong with Mike Boy, his stable companion might be maybe the one to pick up the pieces, and I think it's around about 9 or 10 to 1.
Yeah, it's about 9 to 1 at the moment.
9 to 1, it's not an each, it's not bad for an each way bet, maybe.
Yeah, and on our all our Ladbrokes Republic of Ireland shops, actually, if you're heading in to place a bet, a winner of 5 to 1 or bigger will get you a free bet equal to your stake right throughout the meetings at Kempton and Leopardstown. So 5 to 1 or bigger, you get a free bet as well as your winnings there.
So what about the Leopardstown Christmas Festival? What do you like there, Rob?
I think it's all about Size and John. I think Size and John, I right now say, is my banker for Cheltenham already. And Jessica Harrington has said, you know, Cheltenham is the aim. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see if he wins this race. I can see the odds from tumbling for the Gold Cup in March. But I think he's about 9 to 15 to 8, I think it is it?
2 seconds, I'll get it up.
Size and John
you.
For the Christmas chase, I think.
Yeah.
Decent
about
price now.
About 7 to 4 at the moment, with York Hill 9 to 4, Jackadam 7s, Disco won't run there, but he's 8s anyway, Outlander 8s, Coney Island, Valser Lido, and Road to Respect all 12s and 16s or bigger. And the thing is, we're talking about this at a time when we don't have the decks in, so half that field could be wiped. As you said, Sizing John is definitely going, well, supposedly definitely going according to the trainer. He's no other sort of half aims. And another one that's just so hard to oppose in all of these races
especially at the moment. I think that's an absolute super race. Obviously, it'd be interesting to see how York Hill runs.
It's going to be very interesting to see how York Hill runs. Because like he's an awful lot of hype about this horse and that JLT that it won at Cheltenham. Mm. Like you look at the seconds, Top Notch has come out and won a couple of races. Politolog came out and won the Tingle Creek. Yeah. You know, the form from that JLT is superb. It really is. And York Hill's probably entered in half the races at Cheltenham. Mm. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about 3 miles and will the horse stay 3 miles and the horse is bred to stay 3 miles. So that's the big question. But if things don't go well in this race, if Size and John trumps them, if things don't go well for York Hill, I think this race sort of hinges. His season sort of hinges on this race in terms of what decisions they make after this. But
it'd be interesting as well without Ruby aboard because Ruby's been aboard York Hill for the most of his career. So that is a big miss. That's probably one of the reasons a bit of a swing in this, maybe a little bit more so that Sizey John, as you said, has been the standout horse. Is going to be the one people pile into.
There's a horse in that Leopardstown Christmas race, the old Lexus race that I might have a little each way bet on is called Manila Rocco, JP McManus's horse.
Sounds like a super football agent or something like that, doesn't it?
finished second in the Gold Cup to Sizing John last year. He's had reasonable form, say, around a couple of Cheltenham festivals. He's finished ahead of Native River, who's a decent horse. He's finished ahead of Native River twice at Cheltenham festivals. Second in the Gold Cup last year. Kind of lost his way a little bit. Did he run a Punchestown maybe back in October and had a bad race and another bad race since then? But if to send the horse over, John Joe O'Neill horse, to send it over.
He absolutely flew up that hill at Cheltenham last year. He was going really, really well. Yeah.
He's one I reckon probably will go here. I don't think he's too much else on the agenda from having researched now, but he's 20-1 as well. So with a lot of these going to be cut out, that's a very fair price.
That's
I think.
I'm just looking at the list here. Coney Island's still in this Leopardstown Christmas Chase, but runs at Ascot, I think, at the weekend. And Coney Island's a really interesting horse for this weekend in Ascot. Probably be a short price, but we haven't seen the horse since Leopardstown last year, when just lost narrowly to our Duke in a good novice chase.
Paul, you'll be putting the Christmas bonus, which I believe is quite sizable, from the Mirror on footpad in the novice chase.
I will in my hat. I'm absolutely not. Well, I'd always be slightly wary of odds on sort of chances in novice chases and small fields at Leopard. This horse should absolutely skate in. I think he was fourth in a champion hurdle, maybe.
Yeah, likely banker for the weekend, but you would think it's going to be quite a short price. Let's get it.
Looked a nice sort in that beginner's chase at Navan and favourite for the Arkle,
I'd be the same as what Paul said. I mean, novice chasing, you're never going to be getting heavily involved unless you're crazy. But I mean, you might put in a treble or whatever if you're heading to Leopardstown.
I was going to say, do you know where there's value in this? Because again, looking at the field here, it's an interesting enough field. Footpath is probably the banker of the weekend, I think, to be fair. He's 4-9 at the moment. You've got, at the moment in the betting anyway, again, we don't have the decks at the time recording, but 4-1 Tombstone, 8-1 Avenir de Vie, 12-1 Denariate is about 20s about Jet. And just if you're following in the forecast, I mean, 1-2 with Tombstone is very likely if you're happy enough to take a shorter price on that. But Jet is a big 20-1. Odds on Fav when beaten by Tombstone last time. Now, they're both capable of mistakes. Tombstone probably is a better form going into this. But if you wanted one at a bit of a price, if you like Footpath to go in and route this with Jet maybe back for second at a pretty big price.
So that wraps up the horse racing, lads. We'll just take a quick little look at the rugby. Actually, Declan, have you a little
over the Christmas racing period, be sure to get into our shops. We've got a fantastic 5K. We've got a fantastic 5K lay offer on select races over at Punchestown. So plenty of the RTE races. You'll have that Racing Post novice chase we discussed. The plenty of the racing on Wednesday as well, including the future champions novice hurdle and the Paddy Power Chase. You've got plenty to go through. We'll just name a few of them off as well. The Square Financial Christmas Hurdle on the Thursday, the Leopards and Christmas Chase, of course, we talked about that, and plenty more. So do check those out in shop. 5K lay to lose guarantee in your Ladbrokes Republic of Ireland shops, for as well as that, the ITV racing. So you'll have quite a lot of your RTE and ITV, Race RTV3, we'd be watching it on over here, racing covered with that. So be sure to join us in shop. We guarantee to lay any horse to at least €5,000 on select RTE and ITV races.
Great stuff, Declan. We're coming down towards the end of the show, which makes me sad, a little bit emotional. So what better thing to talk about than rugby at this stage and getting to the emotional pitch? There's a couple of the interprovincial games, Munster against Leinster and the game that's on the hind tit, basically, which is Connacht against Ulster. Johnny Sexton won't be involved.
No.
Concussed after 2 minutes against Exeter. Mm-hmm. I mean,
he hasn't been ruled out yet.
No, he's a few checks to do.
Well, he's doing the return to play protocol, which is a worrying term in itself. Should be a return to health protocol.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I was at the Leinster press conference the other day when they clarified it. So he obviously came off very early in that Exeter Chiefs game. Didn't look right, initially. But obviously then the TV cameras sort of cut and you could see him in the stand and he's chatting away to people and what have you. But I think that night at the RT Sports Awards, Joe Schmidt was on TV and had said that Sexton had passed his HIA. Leinster then on Tuesday, at the press conference, were pretty quick to clarify that in fact he had actually failed it, because so you have to do HIA 1, HIA 2, HIA 3. But within the head injury assessment 1, the first test, there's 4 components of it. And he failed some of those 4 aspects of it, which ultimately means you failed it. So he then has 6 days. He has to be stood down as such, to use jockey speak, for from 6 days from the day of the game. So he this week has been doing his HIA 2, 3, 4 behind the scenes at Leinster, and ultimately, if he passes those, he could be fit to play on St. Stephen's Day. But the suspicion would be that on the back of those couple of European, you know, tough games against Exeter, that they'll probably leave him be.
Well, Pro 14, when you compare it with Six Nations and compare it with the European Champions Cup, just does not matter, relatively
speaking. Yeah, well, I was at this fixture last year. I'm going to be at this one this year again,
I was
at
2 years ago. It was brutal.
I enjoyed it. Oh, that being said, I was a Leinster fan sitting amongst the Munster family in the Munster ends, and I wasn't great crack. But yeah, just looking at a few others there that will be out. Keane Healy's banned for this, of course.
Yeah.
You've got Sean O'Brien's out, Ruddock's out, Carberry's out. So quite a few likely changes. Interesting, I think it was Jerry Thornley flagged this up actually during the week. The amount of Leinster players spread at the moment, their production line is really outstanding. 13 players in Connacht, 6 in Munster, 9 in Ulster, and they've got 38 themselves to sort of pick from. So really is a...
This is the only academy that's really working. Even at Munster, I think the wing likes a Conway.
So you wouldn't be too surprised. I mean, the swing at the moment with a few of them coming in, if we've seen them in the last couple of weeks, Leinster have looked very strong, even when they've had a couple of replacements coming in. At this fixture earlier in the season, Earls, I thought, caused Leinster a lot of trouble, and he's due back for this one. So that could be one to keep an eye on. And Ian Keighley coming back to some kicking form looks.
It's a couple of big boosts for Munster this week with CJ Stander signing on.
That's
and
huge, yeah.
Peter O'Mahony as well. No doubt they held him to ransom. Yeah. They ball.
I think I find now, by no means is rugby my sort of day job. I normally just do football, but I would dip in and out of rugby around this time of the year, the odd time. So by no means am I any sort of expert.
Come on, give us your expert.
But no, yeah. But I always just find, from a betting perspective, these Pro 14 derby games coming so quickly on the back of big European games, and the inevitable change in the teams, because these squads are just massive. Like the amount of players that are in these sort of setups, you know, the amount of Leinster players, Munster players in this, and they have to rejig it just through the whole sort of attritional sort of. Yeah. Take that you know, coming out of a rugby match, I just find it a hard, you know, as a bit of an outsider, I find it a sort of a hard betting proposition to actually know what exactly you're going to be facing on St. Stephen's Day.
Yeah, well, on the prices here at the moment, Munster 4-7, the tie's 25-1, Leinster 13-8. Obviously, we'll have to wait to see, what, as you said, what teams are brought out for that. But I tell you what's an interesting market is the halftime full time, actually. There's probably a little bit of value in that, depending on how you see it, because it's 4 on the handicap. So Munster -4, you can get about evens. I'd tend to more maybe go for, I mean, a weaker Leicester team. If you like, maybe the halftime full time Leicester and then Munster, you can get about 6-1 on that, or Leinster, I should say, and then Munster, which, I mean, takes a little bit of a reasonable start for Leinster, followed by Munster coming out in the second half and kicking on a bit. Or the opposite, Munster and maybe Leinster to turn them over, which I might have a quid or two on at 15-2.
Yeah, and no harm that all four teams are on the back of back-to-back wins over English teams in Europe as well. And Paul, your point about the fact that they could be much changed after, you know, the attritional, I suppose, manner of those games. I'd be going with a Munster-Connacht double here.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. I mean, I'd take Munster maybe on the handicap if you're going to take Munster, because you're getting even money. -4, Connacht are pretty short as well, 10-11. I wouldn't write Ulster off. Ulster have played some impressive stuff. They're later in the year, they're going to really struggle when Eliafatano goes back to Australia. That's when they'll probably fall apart.
Okay. Any bets of the week, guys?
I think I'm going to go for Sizing John here. I think could really go well at Leopardstown, and I think that price is definitely worth getting in all the accumulators, all the trebles, the whole lot.
And what's the accumulator that you'd put your name to?
I think the treble would be you know what I mean, Harry, Might Boy and Sizing John. I think you're getting decent enough odds.
Is footpad worth the risk considering the price is so
footpad
short?
Footpad wins that easily.
Yeah. Mm. And one leg, three easy. Legs, I mean.
I think, but just the odds on and Novice Chase, I think the other three are, you know, they're all in around, they're all decent enough prices, they're all odds against, so I'd be putting a 3 of them in a treble.
Paul?
Can I go a little bit of a curveball?
You can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Insist.
The Ryanair hurdle at Leopardstown at Christmas, on the last day of the Christmas meeting. There's a horse, it's the Faugheen race.
Mm.
Now, I see there's only sort of 5 left in the race, which is a little bit disappointing, and I kind of thought there might be a couple more, maybe just to stretch it out for the each way value, but the second string Willie Mullins horse there, Silas Emery, won at the Punchdown Festival. Decent horse, can definitely pick up a bit of prize money there. Now, five runners in the race each way will just be quarter the odds, first and second. But at around 11-2, 6-1, I think Silas Emery is a bit of value.
Footpad's a banker for me. I think there's value on that Footpad Jet forecast, but I'll go with Disco each way as my banker for the King George.
Okay, lads, I think we've it all said again this week. So my thanks to Declan Maron from Ladbrokes, Paul O'Hare from the Mirror, Rob Hines from the Mirror, and from myself, Shane Stapleton. I had most difficulty with my own name there, Jesus Christ. So don't forget, you can subscribe to us on iTunes and Spotify, and we'll see you after Christmas. Happy Christmas.
The Back Page, brought to you by Mirror Sport and backed by Ladbrokes.